Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. If by Hollywood you mean Burbank, across the street from a Wiener Schnitzel that sells beer. This is 2 hours of the business end of show business. We do this every Sunday on KEIB. That is 1150 on your AM dial. If you're driving around LA right now, you're in the right place. And if you want to listen to the show as a podcast, someone magically cuts it all up and presents it later in the evening on iHeartRadio or on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm actually in the studio in Burbank, and sometimes I'm over in, across from Tower 8 at Seal Beach in the Planet of the Tape studios. But right now we are actually really live, actually across the street from the Wiener Schnitzel that sells beer. What a celebration. Sam, great to see you.
Seriously, just having you here, it feels like a whole new world for me.
Yeah, this is magical radio.
And after this, we're going to go and have that beer on tap over at Der Wiener Schnitzel.
Yeah, we're going to drink exotic craft beers and North Korean fusion tacos, which are on sale right now down at Wiener Schnitzel, and drink beer in a lovely fluorescent lit room with homeless people who have scraped together $1.25 for a hot dog. So that's the kind of atmosphere that we're talking about up here in Burbank at the Wiener Schnitzel. I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, you go to a dive bar, it's really, really dark. How about the opposite? A dive bar that is lit like a operating room in a horror film.
I think that's a great theme for a dive bar, actually. A horror film operating room dive bar.
You know, the best bar theme that I've, themed bar I've ever been to, now that we're talking about bar themes, and anyone can have this idea, I'm giving it to you for free. It's worth every penny. Now, there's a bar in Madrid called the Goring Bar, and it's wall-to-wall pictures of bullfighters getting gored in the nuts, in the face, in the throat, in the back, like that. Now, to the serious bullfight fan, they're fascinating pictures because it does happen, and it's a tribute to fallen heroes and injured brave men. But if you hate bullfighting, then you're just laughing your ass off at these pictures. You think it's great. So you capture everybody with this one genre of decor. There's not one person that's going to – nobody's going to not enjoy that bar. And I go there every time, and you can't even move around. It's so crowded. Someone should build one here.
That sounds awesome, actually.
Pictures are amazing. I mean they're gripping. It's danger. It's action. It's tight pants.
You know, passion in tight pants.
It's passion. Speaking of passion, we're going to talk to one of the area's foremost experts on live theater in Los Angeles later on. So if you are wondering what's going on in live theater, you know, is it back? How's it going? We're gonna get into it. And all you Los Angelinos that are wondering where the hot plays are and the musicals, we will tell you. And how to get tickets. Some ticket tips. But live theaters later. First, we're going to talk about the stuff that we're more familiar with. And number one is the box office. The box office, very interesting this week. They have a new entry, two new entries. The one that everyone had high hopes for is the Elvis movie. Now, the Elvis movie looks like it has pulled in $30 million. They were, you know, estimates were $20 to $50 million. In other words, nobody knew what this movie was going to do. Comes in at 30 and makes number two. So it doesn't make number one, but it barely does. And that could, after they count all the votes, maybe at the end of this, it could be tied for number one. Number one, according to the site I use, thenumbers.com, Top Gun, still number one. At right now, it just has $176 more.
That's it?
That's it.
So wow.
Virtually a tie. So it hasn't knocked off the Top Gun on this list, but the competition is so bad for Elvis. It turned out to be a bad weekend to release a movie. We have Top Gun, which is still going strong. It won't go away. It's such a surprise juggernaut. It has dropped 30%, but it's still, you know, $30 million. That's a lot these days. Elvis is $30 million. Number three, Jurassic World. So that's like been out for a couple weekends, and it has dropped off 55%, but that's still $26 million. I mean, there's just not that many people to go around. But look at all these, like, you know, high dollar grosses that we're having. Then we have a new film from Universal called The Black Phone. Is that a Blumhouse movie? It's got to be. But this is I don't see a lot of horror films. But The Black Phone, you know, I've seen a lot of trailers. And those things usually do pretty good. 23 million, number four. Lightyear, wow, kind of a disaster. Number five, doing 17 million. This week, it's only been in the theaters for 2 weeks, and it's already down to 17 million. Top Gun has been in the theaters for 5 weeks, and it's still pulling in 30 million in a weekend. So Doctor Strange is still there, you know, dropping fast. And then, of course, Everything Everywhere All at Once is still making money. And the rest of it is boring.
Did you see this one thing? I made a highlight on that last sheet of paper I gave you. At the very end, the film Marcel with Shell with Shoes On appears to be it's one of those art house animated films that
Marcel the Shell with Shoes On,
yeah that one is a little tiny, like
a little tiny movie that could A24, they're the hottest independent film studio in the country for sure, so it's got to be good if they picked it up and they're putting it in theaters. It's definitely something to see. And it's at number 12. Hey, good for them. Now, Jurassic World, bad reviews, so it's not doing that great. Top Gun, of course, doing great. Elvis has mixed reviews. Sam thought, everybody says, this is a fantastic film. What a biopic. Then I've heard two people in a row on podcasts that I listen to just saying, save your money. It is a pile.
That's the thing. I don't know what exactly to follow on that, because there's people that I know that are like, it's actually really good. It's a great portrayal of Elvis.
Yeah. So I don't. Yeah.
But you gotta, I don't know.
You got to reserve your judgment and go see it.
Yeah.
And Baz Luhrmann, the director of such smash hits as Chicago, you know, it's been entrusted to him, I think, by the Presleys. Lisa Marie Presley likes it. Priscilla Presley likes it. Which kind of means that it's probably really good, favorable, and doesn't show him dying on a toilet or anything, you know. So if they're giving it their stamp of approval, that's a good sign, I would say. Or it's a bad sign. Look at me, just hedging my bets. So I'll see it this week. I couldn't see anything this week because I'm still making this TV show. But it'll be out in August on Fox Nation. So look for that. It's called Alien Abductions with Abby Hornacek. Are you familiar with Jeff Hornacek, Sam?
Yes, I am. Former basketball player for the Utah Jazz back in the day and the Phoenix Suns. He coached for a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, he's still coaching over at, I think, assistant coach in Houston. But this is his daughter, Abby. She's the host of my show, Alien Abductions with Abby Hornacek.
That's fascinating.
Look for it in August. And I just hope I can hand it in on time, because there's a lot of pressure to do that. As a showrunner, everything is your fault. And you have to think about every frame of that TV show, and you have to think about it all day and all night. You go to sleep worrying about it. You wake up worrying about it. And some people don't want to be showrunners because they just rather write the scripts and hand them in and, you know, do some other producing work. But when you're the showrunner, it's all on you. And one time I had a meeting with a manager, and he goes, what do you want to do? What's your goal? I just want to be a showrunner. And he looked at me like, what a fool. Like, you know, just like the wrong answer. You're stupid then, right? Oh, you don't know how hard that is? Well, now I know. But I'd rather be the showrunner than any other guy on the thing. I don't know. I might as well. You know what's great about being the showrunner? Have you ever been around a movie set?
I have. One or two times, yes.
Okay, you know when you're like, you're kind of on walking on eggshells. Because there's so many people around, and a lot of them are jerks, and they're like, don't stand here. Don't look. What are you doing here? Like, you're in the way, pal. Move it, pal. There's, yeah. There's a lot of that. When you're the showrunner, they just look at you as something they have to move around. Stand on whatever you want. You can stand in the shot. And the director will look at you and go, I don't know how to tell him. And sometimes I am the director for, you know, certain shoots, but even the cameraman will go, I really don't want to tell him to move, but he's right in front of the lead actress. I don't know. And then they just kind of sit around and like, oh, wait, I'm in the shot, aren't I? Yeah, you are. Okay, I'll move. Okay, thanks. But if you were anyone else, they would, you'd be run out of town. So that's kind of fun. Just stand around in different places you're not supposed to stand. That's how I get my entertainment. Did you see any movies, Sam?
Not this week, no. I was helping friends move to a new house, so I've been kind of occupado.
You're excused. I'm a little unprepared today because I went and had a birthday lunch with my Aunt Emma.
Well, there you go.
My Aunt Emma, Cousin Teresa.
Where'd you go eat?
Where do you think you eat with relatives?
IHOP.
Close. BJ's.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Classic. It's not bad.
No, it wasn't bad at all. I had a great... What are we talking about? All right, let's move on to this. Are you watching any TV shows?
I'm trying to pick up one, and I'm trying to remember which one it was. Somebody told me, as a radio person, I have a hard time saying this. Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek. If you watch that all the way through, there's no better TV show made in the last, couple decades. It is a little bit of a ripoff of Green Acres. So if you like that, go back and watch Green Acres on one of these MeTVs or Decades. Because to me, Green Acres is the funniest sitcom, the best sitcom ever made, and Schitt's Creek is pretty close. It's a fine, valiant effort, and I've seen all of them. So my wife just rewatches them. She'll start from the beginning and watch them again. She's done that twice. I'm trying to get through Ozarks.
You've been telling me you've been watching that one.
Yeah, I've watched the first, all the episodes, and this final season, whatever it is, I kind of losing it. I'm losing interest. It's boring me. So I'm just going to go back to The Offer on Paramount Plus, which I haven't finished yet, but I will. Let's take a break, and we're going to check the traffic. And when we come back, hopefully we have our expert on L.A. theater and even New York theater, Mr. Kevin Gilkinson. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. By Hollywood, you mean Burbank. This is the business end of show business, TV, film, and now theater with everybody's favorite theater expert, Kevin Gilkinson. Kevin, thanks for joining the program.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I know you're busy right now, so I don't want to keep you too long. In fact, you're going to the theater tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. I'm actually going to the Mark Taper Forum to see a play called King James.
King James? What's that?
Yeah,
this sounds like a Comedy Bang Bang skit. Like you're about to go down dark on some weird theater thing, but it's not. I assure everybody, this is actually serious.
Right. There's no Scott Aukerman in this one, but it's actually about LeBron James, not the king of English times, but
okay.
It's a story about two men and talking about their love for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, wow.
And LeBron James, yeah.
You can tell he's a real theater goer if he'll sit through that for 2 hours or however long it will be. So,
yeah. It's
you got to see it, though. If you're a theater fan and they're doing a LeBron James play, is it a play? Are we calling it?
Yes, it's a play. Two characters just talking about their relationship with the game, basketball, and the city of Cleveland.
Yep. Wow. Okay. Better you than me, I say on that one. Have fun. And so what else is happening? What are the hot tickets right now for LA theater in LA, and where are they and what are they?
I would say Moulin Rouge is probably going to be the biggest event of the summer in LA.
Wow.
It's going to be running at the Pantages Theater for July and August.
Classic.
Straight from Broadway.
That
won a couple Tonys.
Okay, so the Tony, we just had the Tonys just now. We just had them.
Yeah, there was a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago.
Okay, did you watch that?
Yes, I did. I didn't watch the pre-show on Peacock. I missed that with Darren Criss.
Okay.
But I did watch the full show, and I thought Ariana DeBose did a great job at hosting.
Excellent. And who's the big winner at the Tonys this year?
I would say the biggest winner was probably, there were a few, but Company, the Stephen Sondheim revival with Patti LuPone, mm-hmm. that won a lot of awards. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest play was the Lehman Trilogy. That won quite a few. And that one actually just did a run at the Amundsen a few months ago that I was fortunate enough to see.
Okay, now the Lehman Trilogy, is it about the Lehman Brothers stock market stuff?
Right, yeah, it's all about their, it's the entire story of the Lehman Brothers coming from the 1800s from Europe all the way to Atlanta, Georgia, and their story of their rise to power, and it goes through multiple generations, And it's just three characters on the stage, and they play various characters, and it's really interesting.
Wow. You got me on that one. That one sounds fascinating. It's original, and it sounds like The Godfather with just not as much death and dead horses and stuff.
Right. Not as many dead horses. But yeah, all three of those actors were nominated for a Tony for Best Actor in a Play.
Very good.
So it's really great performances.
So that was a big deal. Now, was the Sondheim thing company? Did you see that?
Yeah, actually, I saw it twice because I liked it so much. I really wanted to see it again, just because I saw it in December, just after the passing of Stephen Sondheim. Mm-hmm. So it was a really, touching time. And so I wanted to be a part of that and see his, I can never get enough Sondheim. I love all the productions.
I'm with you.
Sunday in the Park with George, which is coming to the Pasadena Playhouse next season.
What's that one called?
Assassins is a great one. It's called Sunday in the Park with George.
Okay. Sunday in the Park with George. And where's that going to play?
At the Pasadena Playhouse.
Okay. Okay. And I'm kind of sidetracking you and all that stuff, and I apologize. But okay, so we did the Tonys.
There's a lot of tangents to take. Yeah, so the Tonys.
Yeah, we did the Tonys. I think we got the Tonys.
The Tonys.
And now let's get back to L.A. and what should people be looking at? Where should they spend their theater ticket money this summer other than the one you said is the Moulin Rouge is the big one? What else should they be doing?
Right. I also like to go to the Geffen Playhouse. The Geffen Playhouse has a lot of good original stories to tell. The upcoming one is a world premiere musical called A Wicked Soul in Cherry Hill, and that's about a murder mystery that took place in 1994.
It's a world premiere?
Yeah, it's a world premiere musical at the Geffen Playhouse.
Oh, okay.
By Matt Schatz.
Oh, okay, so that one's good. Anything else?
Well, let's see. Also, if you go down south a little bit to the La Jolla Playhouse, there's also a musical called Lempicka about the artist in the early 1900s. And that is being directed by Rachel Chavkin, who is the director of Tony-winning Hadestown and Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
Hmm. Wow. See, Sam, I'm talking to the right guy here.
I've heard a lot of good things about Hadestown, I just got to say.
Okay, so Hadestown.
Oh, yeah, Hadestown was a great one. That won Best Musical in 2019, and that is, I believe, coming back into the L.A. area at the Amundsen and also the Sagerstrom Center.
And you go to New York a lot, though, right?
I've tended to go to New York a little bit more often than usual lately. I just got back from New York in May. And I'm heading back out there again in July.
Yeah, so you're all over.
The ones I didn't catch.
Right, so you're not. It's not just you. You're able to compare these shows to what goes on in New York. And how do you think Los Angeles stands up?
Los Angeles compared to Broadway,
yeah.
I would say. I mean, it's not quite the level of a Broadway performance, but a lot of the times they're hard to tell the difference. Like I just saw Zachary Quinto and Calista Flockhart in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf the Geffen Playhouse. And that was, a Broadway caliber play for sure. I mean, you wouldn't know the difference. So yeah, I mean, I would say a lot of the time it stacks up pretty well, but you go to Broadway just because it's the bigger name.
Yeah. It's an experience.
Time. Yeah. Yeah.
And now what about, how much average are you paying for a theater ticket in Los Angeles?
That's a good question. Well, I like to operate on a somewhat side of budget. I like to get a good deal if I can. Gold Star or Today Tix, those are always good spots to look for discounts on tickets. But I would say...
Gold Star and what?
Today Tix.
Today, are these apps or are these websites?
They're both.
Okay.
They're both websites and apps. I probably use more of the website, but they're also apps.
Okay. And
I would say I spend probably $40 to $50 on average.
That's a great deal. I'm thinking, like $325 or $175.
That's the Music Man. If I want to buy tickets for the Music Man, I'm looking right now at about like $270 if I'm going to see it when I go next month.
Oh, in New York. That'd be $270.
Yes, in New York. Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster.
What's the highest price you've ever paid for a theater ticket, for one single ticket?
That would be Hamilton in its heyday in 2016, for sure. I forked over a small fortune to get to see Lin-Manuel Miranda and the original Broadway cast in a production.
Let's hear the number.
And he wasn't even there.
And he didn't show
he
up.
He wasn't there.
He's a bum.
He wasn't there, so I had to go to the Friday night show as well.
You had to buy another ticket.
I had to buy another ticket.
Okay, how much did these tickets cost?
Another small fortune. Oh, back in those times, they were about $1,200, $1,300 for a ticket.
Nice. So you can get tickets. So Gold Star and Today's Ticks, whatever. We're going to, all right.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Kevin Gilkinson, our theater expert. We're going to have you back. All right. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Thanks
have fun tonight at the Mark Taper Forum.
All right. I will. Thanks.
Okay. Bye. All right. That was great. Joe Escalante live from Hollywood. Back after, we check in with traffic and stuff like that. Okay, Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. By Hollywood, you mean Burbank. This is the business end of show business. And do it every Sunday for 2 hours in 5 to 7. 11:50 on your AM dial, and the podcast comes out later. And you'll find it. If you type in Escalante or Joe Escalante or whatever, you'll see it. It'll come up. And now... Now we can add live theater to our list of amazing things that we cover, where we had Kevin Gilkinson give his report, and I think we'll have to have him back real soon.
I agree. And he gave such a good local take on what's available out here for the audience out here to catch.
Yeah. But it comes from a guy who's going to New York at least twice a year. So he knows what he's talking about. And he's only paying $40, $50 a ticket? Jeez.
That's actually really helpful, the information he gave about how to find
Gold Star
affordable
and tickets today. Star tickets today. Okay, I got it. All right. Some performers in the theater, and by the theater I mean the Bronx Zoo, don't have it as good as these Broadway performers and are actually put in confinement, and they have very few rights at all. Now, you might think, well, big deal, Joe. They're elephants. And you would be right. Big deal, they're elephants. But of course, we always want these elephants to be treated well, and we want them to be happy, but we want them... And there's a lot of... Look, the stuff good goes on at zoos, the breeding stuff, the ability to study animals and help the species and prevent extinction and stuff like that. And that's one side of it. The other side of it is some people are just saying, get those animals out of their cages. And they have, and one way they do it is by using the courts. And there's a case involving an animal and trying to confer rights onto them. There's like copyright cases, like a monkey paints a picture. Who owns it? Who owns that picture? Well, I don't know. You know, the owner of the monkey, probably. What about the monkey? He's a monkey. And that's the way it's been. And those cases usually get thrown out pretty low. But New York's highest court has now ruled on a personhood for animals case, and it deals with Happy the Elephant, who has been a resident of the Bronx Zoo for more than 40 years. And he's named Happy. I mean, he must be happy, right, Sam?
I would hope, unless it's ironic, like Curly from the Three Stooges.
Could be. Well, also, if you have an unhappy elephant and you're trying to distract people, name him Happy. Happy the Dwarf. I don't know. Okay, never mind. I'm not going to talk about people that are not tall anymore. I'm going to talk about tall people from now on. Okay, so the dispute hinges on this Happy the Elephant thing, on whether the cornerstone legal principle of habeas corpus, which people assert to protect their bodily liberty and to contest illegal confinement, should be extended to autonomous, cognitively complex animals like elephants. What do you think the court said, Sam?
I have no idea.
We have a ruling. No. The answer is no.
No.
No one disputes the impressive capabilities of elephants, the court said, but we reject petitioners' arguments that it is entitled to seek the remedy of habeas corpus on Happy's behalf. Habeas corpus is a procedural vehicle intended to secure the liberty rights of human beings who are unlawfully restrained, not non-human animals. So they're just asserting a legal principle that is for humans. And then if you think animals are humans, well then, you know what? It's a lot of like this Roe versus Wade thing. If this is what you think, then go talk to your, you know, persuade your neighbors. Now, right now we have Roe versus Wade is gone. So, to me, a simple way to think of that is the court said, hey, Why are we deciding when this a weird law, Roe versus Wade? I mean, it was a weird legal decision. Like, oh, women have a right to privacy, and by a penumbra of these other rights, and they kind of fashioned it and said, okay, there's a right to privacy, and that was one thing. But then it was like, it confers after 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 5 weeks. When does this right of privacy end? And then it's just like a viable human being that you can regulate whether it gets killed or not. So it was, the court was like, why should we do that? Why is the court doing that? Why don't you people go? Why don't the legislators do it? And of course, the answer would be because they might mess it up and it's so important, it has to be a federal law. Well, now we have judges that are saying, I don't think that's the right way to do it. Go back to your states, persuade your neighbor, get outside, talk to your neighbors, vote for people that with your like-minded things, and then you will then do it that way. And that's what they did with like the death penalty. When I was younger, death penalty was a huge thing. It was a national issue. And it kind of went away because the high courts said, just go talk about it in states. I actually changed my mind on the death penalty, Sam, over time. Because it was, as it was legislated in my state, I started thinking, I go, this is number one, a waste of resources. These people, I'm not smart enough to know whether they deserve to die. I'm just not. But they don't die. They end up getting all these appeals. And it just doesn't seem to work. Who among us knows when it's okay to kill someone? It's too hard. So it went back to the states, and then over the time I just said, okay, I'm against the death penalty, and that's because it went back to the states, and then I had to think about it. I had to vote on it all the time, and I had to really think of myself: am I really going to vote to kill people in confinement? I had to think about it. But if it was just up to the Supreme Court, I wouldn't have to think about it. So I think a lot of people are going to think about that issue. All kinds of issues, because the court is saying, go back to the states. You guys work it out on a local level. So I know we're headed for a lot of heated arguments over the summer over this, but I hope that in the end, everyone is actually benefited by paying attention to stuff like this on a local level. Know who your representatives are. Talk to them. Talk to people that you want to persuade and to be like you. So same thing with Happy the Elephant. If you want elephants to be to have rights conferred on them like humans, so that they cannot be confined into zoos, persuade your neighbors and make laws. You don't use habeas corpus where it has to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court's going to rule on that. They don't want to do that. And then I've said, that's what the Supreme Court has said. We don't do this. Go and figure it out. Change the laws. And then we'll tell you if your law is unconstitutional, but that's all we do. We don't make laws. We don't decide when, a right to privacy exists after, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 24 weeks. Who made us that? We hate it. We don't want to do it. You guys do it. So now we have to do it as, citizens of each state. And the same with this animal thing. Like, I get it. I'm not smart enough to know whether we should be putting animals in zoos or not. I don't know. But, if you feel strongly about it, go and talk to your neighbor. But the court here is saying these federal civil rights kinds of things are not the place for everything. And they and to them, and then we could have another court later that says, this is absolutely the place. For now, we don't. So poor elephant is going to be stuck there. The elephant's been there for 40 years. I wonder how long elephants live. I don't know, but this isn't a torture case, because the people are saying the Happy the Elephant is very well cared for, and the Bronx Zoo is a credible, legitimate zoo. But many people think zoos are inherently evil, and there should be none. And again, persuade your neighbors. Want to get rid of zoos. You got rid of circus animals. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, average lifespan, it depends on what kind of elephant. Asian elephant, 48 years. But African forest or bush elephant, between 60 and 70 years.
That's about the average age of an alcoholic. How about pink elephants?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Those linger for at least one night.
True. Okay, I think we can take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about the Obamas have a company called Higher Ground, and they made a podcast deal, and I'm going to tell you what happened to that podcast deal, and why it happened, and where it's going next on Joe Escalante live from, I have to say Hollywood, but I'm really in Burbank, and we'll be back after the traffic. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. By Hollywood, you mean Burbank. We have, I'm talking about the Obama's podcast. Obama and his wife, Mrs. Obama, they made a huge deal. Remember when they made a deal with Netflix, like over $100 million? In my mind, didn't memorize it, but then they made this podcast deal with Spotify, and this one was like huge dollars. And they, how many dollars was that, Sam? Do you remember? I have it written down here. It was 100 bazillion. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money, and And the Spotify has a lot of money, and they were spending it on rights to, you know, big name artists because they want to, you know, take over the podcast business, and that's how you do it, just by spending like crazy. I guess they're a competitor to our parent company here, In-N-Out Burger. That was just a commercial I heard. Now our parent company, iHeart Media. You know, they're in the podcast business, and everybody's, if a Barack Obama is going to do a podcast, you don't want someone else to get that. So you spend a lot of money. But then what do you get for that money that you give them? Well, Spotify found out you get nothing. You get very little. And so they got dropped from Spotify. The Spotify deal is, they were mad, like the Spotify people were like, these guys won't show up and they won't do anything personally. Like we got them, we gave them all this money, and then so they're supposed to show up and be on podcasts. And they said they wouldn't show up. They just would say, no, we're kind of more behind the scenes. We're going to organize, you know, great podcasts about great stories, and it'll be really great. Just trust me, it's really going to be good stuff. And when the deal went up, Spotify said, forget it. So they're going to Audible, and they're going to get some money. These are like the Sex Pistols. And if you know anything about the Sex Pistols signed a deal with EMI, and then they get an advance, and then they go out and do something outrageous, and then they get dropped, and they go to another major label, and they get an advance there, and then they do something outrageous, they get dropped, and they just keep collecting all these advances until they end up on Virgin Records. So now they're going to Audible, and they'll take an advance there, and we'll see if anybody can make money out of them. This is similar to like the Meghan Markle Prince Harry deal. They made one with Spotify also, and you know, I, in my personal opinion, is you'll never get this value, and then you have to decide and tell your shareholders, convince your shareholders this is a good way to spend money, to overpay for people that don't have any record of drawing audiences on podcasts. They don't have any record making podcasts. They don't have any experience or record producing podcasts, but you give them all this money. So you can be in business with them. And a lot of companies have given Barack Obama a lot of money to be in business with him, like Netflix. You give him all this money, and then you have him. Then you get to hang with him, go to his fancy house in the East Coast, you get to go to his kids' weddings because you're giving him hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's if you're the guy in charge with all this money, that's part of the fun. Like if you're the guy at Aflac Insurance, what do you do? well, I'm going to sponsor Dodger Stadium or whatever, or, you know, and then you're going to get tickets. You're going to meet the ball players. And that's what you do with your money. So Spotify, I think they just go, okay, we met Barack Obama. We met Michelle. They're lovely people. We're not going to lose any more money on them. They gave $30 million to Harry and Meghan. How do you get that back, Sam?
Lots of advertising.
Well, one of the ways they get it back is by making these people exclusive to Spotify, and then they theoretically increase their subscribers and their listeners, but still, it's murky numbers. Like, and your stock, it all depends on if your stock price will accept it. Like, if they think that's a good idea, you'll see the stock will go up. I'm not sure if Spotify is publicly traded, though, but they got out of it, and we'll see what everyone else does. It's, you know, it's like paying a lot of money for any kind of entertainment where you don't really know what you're going to get. Unless you pay a lot of money for Joe Rogan. You pay a lot of money for Joe Rogan, you get a legion of fans. They're dedicated because you have a track record. Guy's already been on the air. We already know what he attracts. So you give him $300 million or whatever, you're going to get your money back. Until he starts having guests on that people don't like. And then you might have some backlash from some advertisers. But the more people that backlash against Rogan, I think the more, you know, popular he gets, perhaps. The same with Howard Stern. He had a track record. So Sirius throws a bunch of money at him because he's got a track record. But when you're paying money for Meghan Markle and Barack Obama, Risky business. If you want to keep your job, then you got to play that game. Maybe you lose Barack Obama to iHeartRadio, and then you get fired for that. How dare you lose that? That should be ours. I can't stand listening to Barack Obama on iHeartRadio. Well, it was $300 million. So, you blew it. I think we can all be happy that that's not our job to decide whether or not that's a good idea. There's some Amber Heard news. Did you know that, Sam?
Yes, there is.
The deal is she's officially on the hook for $10.35 million. She will have to post a bond for that sum, plus interest if she wants to appeal. So she either has to pay him or put up a bunch of money for an appeal.
She could do what I've tried to do. And open up an OnlyFans.
Open up an OnlyFans. You know what? Why don't you explain to our listeners what an OnlyFans site is? Because maybe not everybody knows what that is.
Well, an OnlyFans site is one where you have the freedom to go and broadcast your life. You have a camera on your computer, and you can either have it in your home or wherever, and you can choose whether or not you want to be fully clothed or not.
So there's no censors. So it's for nasty people.
I think they do have some boundaries, but those boundaries are a little more flexible than other sites like, say, Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah, because if you put your boobies on Instagram or Facebook, they would take it down probably, right?
Yes, yes. That would violate their boundaries. But... for OnlyFans, their boundaries are a little bit wider. There are certain things you definitely cannot do on there, but showing parts of your body can help.
Okay, and then people will subscribe to your channel.
Yeah, and donate and things like that.
Oh, donate. I like those girls that have like, here I am, here's my Amazon wish list.
I've seen that.
Yeah, and then like old men just go, I think I'm going to buy that little lady a present. And then you go on there and it's like, just 100 different kinds of underwear?
Pretty much, yeah. Lord knows, when I opened mine up, you know.
How are you doing on that?
You know, hey, people, you'd be surprised, like painted toenails. I can't back that up with anything. I'm just throwing that out there.
Congratulations. Yeah, you could attract like a fetish person with your whatever. And I think there's probably no human being on earth that doesn't have some kind of quality that some weird fetish person won't pay money to have access to.
I'd agree with you on that for sure.
So here's a couple famous people that have OnlyFans accounts. Bad Baby, that's the one I would subscribe to.
She got like over a million
Over
within like the first weekend.
Yeah.
Like she was pulling box office numbers.
No wonder my Instagram feed has gone dry. She's charging for it now. But Bad Baby, I followed her on Instagram because she's funny. She's the one that was on the talk show. Was it?
Yeah, the Dr. Phil or whatever. Phil, yeah. And it was Cash Me Outside Girl.
Cash Me Outside.
Yeah.
Cash Me Outside. How about that?
How about that?
You got Cash Me Outside? How about that? So Bad Baby. Whose name is interestingly, her name is not Cash Me Outside or how about that, but Bad Baby. Cardi B is a very popular person.
Yes,
on there. DJ Khalid and Fat Joe. Am I getting that right?
No, also, Denise Richards just opened one up as well.
Denise Richards, isn't she a little old for this?
Honestly,
51 years old.
There is no age limit, and she's still stunning.
Okay, yeah, all right, good for her. Yeah. Now, Blac Chyna is another big one. Chris Brown. And they are, it's a little vulgar, but whatever.
There's a bit of a backlash against a lot of the celebrities trying to open up OnlyFans because a lot of the amateurs are like, you're stealing our thunder.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the same like major label signing punk bands that I went through when I owned a label. It's like,
yeah.
Like we had this thing going. This was our culture. And then the majors start throwing money into it, and then the originators cannot make a dime. So we'll take a break. We'll come back next hour with more of Joe Escalante live from Hollywood right here on KEIB. Joe Escalante live from Hollywood. Hour number two. If by Hollywood you mean Burbank, across the street from the Wiener Schnitzel that sells beer to anyone. With a phony vaccine card. That's what I'm hearing on the streets. Or a California ID. Now, this is 2 hours of the business end of show business. We are live from Burbank, and we have not been live from Burbank in a while. We've been, you know, kind of doing the remote thing. Big Bear, Seal Beach. But now we're back in what is Hollywood adjacent, I guess. Talking about the business end of show business for you people in Hollywood. Now, can people call this show? Do we have a phone?
We have a couple of different phones. That's not the same number that we had before, but yeah.
They changed my number?
Yeah. I can.
They're going to give me a new business card?
Maybe.
Wow.
I never got the new one.
What's the new number?
Well, you can give us a call at 800. I want to make sure that's the right number. Yeah, 800-929-5678.
5678. Are you familiar with the band? Are you familiar with the band?
The 5678s?
Yeah.
Yes. They're very good.
Tarantino favorite.
Yeah. We just played one of their songs earlier today.
Mm. I played with them on a New Zealand festival.
Aren't they on your like profile picture or something on Facebook?
No, that's my actual family.
Oh, that's a beautiful family.
Thank you. Yeah. You know what? You can go to Live from Hollywood, Joe Escalante Live from Hollywood Facebook and send me a message there. My personal Facebook page, just leave me alone. Okay? Yeah, leave me alone. But anyone can get to me. I'm not that hard to find. Or you go to escalantepictures.com and you can probably get to me through there. Some people do. I think that's the most... That's the place where most random people find me because it's a company I own and, you know, there's a contact and this company has 2 employees. So, I mean, maybe 3, you know, who's going to answer the emails? It's me. And then there's the IMDb page. You just go there to push my rating higher. That's what you do.
Yeah. And you haven't, what, you've gone through like your entire like resume and not even once mentioned music, which is amazing.
Oh, my resume? You mean today? Like just now in this conversation?
No, I mean, you gave a little rundown.
A little rundown. Yeah, I mean, I play in the Vandals, right? And we play, and people, and the number one question about me is, would you guys still play? Guy, we just played a festival 3 weeks ago in England. Two festivals. And we're going to play in Irvine with Flogging Molly.
Oh, cool.
And the Interrupters.
2 great bands.
At the Five Points Theater in, I think that's in September, something like that.
Where is your favorite city that you've ever played?
Well, My favorite actual concert was in this Roman fortress that became a squat in Rome.
Cool.
In the gates outside of the old wall around Rome, and the squatters, they take it over. They put a movie theater in there, they put a restaurant in there, and they put a stage, and they have concerts in the summer. That was the most exciting, other than playing in Iraq for the troops. It was super fun. Then Tokyo is just a great place to play. Dublin. These are the fun places to go and play. And then, yeah, but that still goes on. But my main job is showrunner on two television programs for paranormal shows for Fox Nation. And I just fit in the Vandal shows whenever. And the Sweet and Tender Hooligans, the Morrissey Smith tribute band featuring Jose Maldonado, the Mexican Morrissey. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning that. So,
Morrissey.
Yeah, Morrissey. We are headlining the Pacific Amphitheater on August 7th. And that is an 8,000-seat theater. Okay? Do the math. This is a tribute band. 8,000 tickets to sell. So I'm up here telling you, go to the Orange County Fair. It's part of the Orange County Fair. So the tickets are cheap, and you get to go to the fair. But that's put that on your calendar. August 7th, Sweet and Tender Hooligans. You will not be sad.
That's pretty awesome.
Well, I guess if you're a Morrissey fan, you will be sad. Sorry. All right, let's get back to the show. Enough talk about me. Let's talk about my show. Okay, this section of the program is people in trouble. Okay? Well, it's not even just people, celebrities. They have trouble keeping out of trouble.
Well, there's, you know, celebrities are just like normal people. Some of them are really, really nice, and some of them can't avoid getting in trouble.
Some of them are victims. Okay, these are all people. I feel bad because this is nobody news in trouble.
Seriously, it's like we're running down like the Hall of Fame, the people who have their jerseys on the wall this week, mm-hmm. of all of the people, of the celebs behaving badly.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I think I talked about it last week or the week before, is like I ran into Andy Dick like the night, evening he was convicted of some, you know, BS thing, and no one even knew about it. No one cared. No one just like, it's Andy Dick. No one reported on it. but it's the same thing. This is like, I might as well be talking about another Andy Dick story here. But I like Andy Dick. He's super cool. Jussie Smollett went out in public again. This guy's crazy. I mean, what do you think about this, Sam? He went on a Sirius XM show called Sway in the Morning. And he said, when talking about his case, Jussie Smollett, if you don't remember, faked a racist attack against himself so that he could increase his importance on his Fox Network TV show Empire. He didn't like how he's being treated. He thought he should be more famous and get more stories about him and more camera time. So he said he faked a racist attack. He thought if I was attacked as a gay man and as a gay black man and I became a victim, I would get a raise and I would get more screen time. Okay, this is insidious. He was convicted of it. Okay, it's not like, maybe he did it, maybe he didn't. I mean, this guy did it. Now he goes on the air saying he didn't do it. He was telling the truth. If I had done this, I would be a piece of S. What do you call it? I am not going to say it. And I don't think that's really questionable. Like, just think about that sentence. This is his defending himself. And I used to be a judge in a temporary judge in court. And this is like I was in traffic, did a lot of traffic judge stuff.
Did you go to a temp agency for that?
It was no, because that would be way more rigid in the qualifications. This was like they
I just
told
threw
them
you up there.
I told them I have never been in a courtroom. That's okay. Come on in here. And then I wasn't even ready. Like I wasn't even I was not officially certified yet to be doing it. And then a judge I know said, "Hey, I need some help today. I know you're not like certified yet, but just come on down." And then she threw me up there, and I did a bunch of small claims cases, landlord-tenant cases. Anyway, I've worn the robe. I've sat on the bench. The excuse I hated worse in traffic court was, "Your Honor, He says I didn't stop at that stop sign. But that is not true, because I would never do that. That was the evidence. That I go, is that to you? Is that evidence? I would never do that. Mm-hmm. So other people that come in and say, well, I would sometimes do that, and then they're guilty, and you're not guilty because you would never do that. So that sounds like Jussie Smollett. And he goes on further to say, if I had done something like this, it would mean that I stuck my fist in the pain of Black Americans in this country for over 400 years.
Wow, he's actually quite accurate with what he did.
He's describing what he did.
Yeah.
If it would mean, I mean, bear with me here, it would mean that I stuck my fist in the fears of the LGBTQ community all over the world.
Nailed it.
I'm not that mother effer. Never have been. Don't need to be. That's the I would never run that stop sign, Your Honor. I would never do that. But let me describe what I did. And in that first sentence, if I had done this, I'd be a piece of S. So that means you didn't do it? That's why we convicted you, because this is a law. If you break this law in this way, you're a piece of S. And then he follows it up with, and I don't think that's really questionable. What does that mean? Jibber jab.
He's an actor, but he's not very good at acting sane.
Well, you know what? I have to say, I would love to see this, how he acted it out. Because, you know, yeah, it's on paper, it looks, look good. So he was only in prison for 6 days before he was released because, you know, that's what happens. But he does have this conviction, he's a felon. So will he work again? Probably. So I don't think he helps his case by not showing contrition.
Or just dodging it in some way.
Yeah, and say my lawyers won't let me talk about that right now because there's an appeal and I'm writing a book and there's a movie and my mother's sick and I don't want to do this. There's all kinds of things to say other than I'm going to lie to your face now. You're one more person that I'm going to stab in the back and put my fist in the back.
I mean, he's really doubling down on it.
Yeah.
And it's hard to watch when it's like, I hate to insist upon evidence, but evidence.
Yeah. And, well, the worst one was the noose that he had around his neck, because it was the kind of noose that was made out of this kind of string that you can get at a 7-Eleven. If you go to a 7-Eleven, you go, hey, do you guys have any string or anything? Oh, yeah, we have some, like, wound-up string, you know, on aisle 3 that people need rope by. And that's the kind of string that was, that's kind of, he doesn't know where to get rope. Because he's a prissy actor from Hollywood. Doesn't know what rope is for, doesn't know how to make things or build things. So he doesn't know where to get good rope. He doesn't know, you know. He doesn't know, so he buys it at the 7-Eleven, and it was embarrassing. And he kept the noose around his neck. When the cops came, it was still there. Oh, this? Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is the... Yeah, yeah, I'm glad you're here, because this is the exact noose they tried to lynch me with.
Hours later.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Enough of him.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, check the traffic. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. All right. That's enough of that donkey pox. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. By Hollywood, you mean Burbank. We're continuing here. This is the business end of show business for you Hollywood people running around Hollywood, driving around in your convertibles. And we do celebrity traffic reports, too, because I know you celebrities, you don't want to be sitting in traffic, and you don't deserve it. Because you're famous. Especially when you got that convertible. And people could look next to you, and they could see you. You know, you got to drive fast. So we're going to help you with that every traffic period. Comes all the time. You never know when it's going to come. All right. Paul Haggis, another guy in trouble. We talked about him last week. Now Fox News is reporting that he appeared in court on Wednesday in Italy amid a police investigation into a woman's allegations he had sex with her without her consent over a course of 2 days. Haggis, 69, made no comment. That's how it reads in the thing, Haggis, 69, but it really means Haggis. He's 69 years old. He made no comment as he arrived with Italian attorney Michele Laforgia at the courthouse in Brindisi in the port town of Puglia, the region that forms the heel of southeastern Italy, if you're paying attention. There was no sign that members of his family who were in Italy at the time joined in. Now, when they say members of his family, Sam, do they mean his wife? Does he have a wife? Is he married? Can you find out for me? People need to know. It's Sunday, and we want to go to bed thinking that he did not commit adultery.
Give me one moment. I'm going to dig in.
Okay. Prosecutors announced Sunday that the police had detained the Canadian-born director, screenwriter, and producer for investigation of alleged aggravated sexual violence and aggravated personal injuries.
I don't think he is currently married. He was married, but it looks like that stopped in 2016.
Okay. The Italian media says the victim is a 30-year-old English woman who had known Haggis before he came to the tourist town of Ostuni to participate in an arts festival. Yeah, he wrote some big movies, Crash, Million Dollar Baby, and he was the creator of Walker, Texas Ranger.
He was married to Deborah Renard from Dallas, from the show Dallas.
Oh, of course he was. He was king of television with his Walker, Texas Ranger success. He has made so much money from Walker, Texas Ranger. I will tell you because I made his original deal, Sam. Do you know that?
Really?
Yeah, I made the deal for him at CBS, gave him the profits. After I left, he had to sue for the profits, probably. But he, everybody who sued for the profits on that show won, and they got profits, and they made a lot of money. Here's what you don't know. The other side of this guy has made enemies with this Church of Scientology. So people believe that the Church of Scientology is trying to get him, because he has left over the gay issue. The Church of Scientology is a very harsh policy against homosexuality. And although Paul Haggis was a dedicated church member, at certain point he said, hey, we have to, modernize our views on homosexuality. And they said, no, this is a strict law in the church against that. And he said, come on, we're living in the 21st century now. And they said, no, we're not. And he left the church, and then they went after him. And then he had some other case like this, and people say that this was also a setup. So think about it, Sam. You're in Italy. You meet a nice girl. Take her back to the hotel room. She wants to hang around for a couple days. And then you take her to the airport when you're done with your illicit tryst. Another reason to avoid sex outside of marriage. This is an argument for chastity. He drops her off, and then she goes to the police and said, I didn't have a great time for 2 days. I was being raped. Now, is she a Scientology plant? What do you think, Sam? On a scale of 1 to 100, what's the percentage that she is a Scientology plant?
I'd say probably out of 100, I'd probably say about 28, 29.
Really? Are you saying that because of your love for the Church of Scientology or your fear of the Church of Scientology?
I have no love for them. I have fear for them, but it's based off of the fact that he just left somebody in a state of trauma at an airport.
How do you know she's in a state of trauma?
That's the thing. We don't.
Right.
So,
but if
like,
you're,
I'm
if,
like,
30, you might
about,
be right.
Roughly 30% of me is saying...
You're already up to 30% now.
Yeah,
okay, 28, I see.
28, 29, 30%, around there.
Okay, so she's... if she is a Scientology plant, how hard is it to say, okay, look, when you go to the police, make sure you tell them that you're traumatized. Make sure you tell them you're sore. Make sure you tell them you go over it. All right, let's go over it again. Okay, I'm the Italian cop. I say, how do you feel? And you say, I feel terrible, right? I feel not so bad. No, you feel awful. You're in pain,
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I'm not saying it based off of like, I don't think the victim here is more or less like, capable of coming up with such a big lie. My feelings of and my rating being as high as it is, is based off of just how deep Scientology seems to get their fingers in things.
Yeah, but then why only 30%?
Because I'm still, I tend to believe victims
Believe the victim, right. Yeah, because that is something that...
Because if it actually happened, it's more traumatizing.
If you don't, it goes down an unintended path that is really bad for everybody. So
yeah.
It's safer to say, let's believe the victim, and we'll get to the bottom of it.
Exactly.
I admire your civility. With me, I'm at about 42. 42%. That this is a setup. And, you know, but at least it's like she's reported it now. I think that gives her a lot of credibility rather than the ones that say, this happened to me 100 years ago, and I went into regression therapy, and there's the proof right there. It all came back to me. And I was afraid to report it earlier, blah, blah, blah. All the witnesses are now dead, and so I'm now coming forward. It's better than one of those.
Significantly.
But, wow, this is going to be fascinating. This could be the next Paul Haggis movie.
It'll be interesting. I want to see how it all boils out. But yeah, if it turns out that there's the fingerprints of Scientology behind it, then you could definitely, it's another brick in the wall against Scientology. But at the same time, if this was a real deal thing that happened and she was truly victimized, then people not buying into it and not believing her,
right.
It's,
and
it's just more traumatization that ends up happening.
Yeah, and blaming Scientology, then she doesn't have to go through that. But also, if you're going to don't have sex outside of marriage. That's the advice from this Hollywood show business show, and avoid these kinds of things. Joe Escalante live from Hollywood. You're not going to get advice like this on any other of these, you know, The Ankler or Puck or all these other Hollywood podcasts on Podcast World. Those are great, but you're not going to get advice like that. All right, after the break, we will continue. Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood. By Hollywood, you mean Burbank. This is the business end of show business. And we got a couple more segments to go here. And the first story I want to talk about is the Green Day band. Are you a Green Day fan, Sam?
I know all of their work, I would say, and I appreciate how great they are as far as like the imprint that they left, the footprint they left within music for the era that they were in. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of theirs, but I am totally familiar with all their work.
Yeah, it's a great band. Great songs and a great legacy. Huge band. Huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. I will pay to see them for sure.
I will pay to see them too. I haven't.
You haven't needed to, have you?
No, I don't.
Lucky.
So the singer, Billy Joe Armstrong, has said on stage in England that he is renouncing his U.S. citizenship and he's going to move to England because of the recent Supreme Court decision. And he's, and he said, quote, "There's too much effing stupid in the world." So he's moving to England. He made his remarks were met with just an eruption of applause from the crowd. Do you think that's a little bit, is it a little bit pandering when you're at a rock concert in England and say you're going to renounce your U.S. citizenship over a left-wing political philosophy?
Well, if that's what he subscribes to, then, and obviously the crowd there, he was, you know, it may be pandering to them saying that I am moving here. Had he gone, if they were playing a show in Thailand or anywhere else, he was like, I'm going to move to Thailand instead, then I'd agree. Then, yeah, it's like he's pandering. But I get the feeling that he probably, like, London, England is a nice place to move to. If that's where his heart's at, then he can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just played a concert in London, England. And
you were saying that
if you say the Queen or the Jubilee, we were there during the Jubilee, and to me, like, that was pretty exciting. But if you say Jubilee or Queen, any of our references on stage met with boos, because that's the people that go to rock concerts and they like to, you know, be subversive and hate the Queen. Queen represents a lot of tradition. So he is now moving to a monarchy. To escape,
that's kinda funny,
to escape democracy. I get it. So, I mean, this, we see this all the time. Is this, I mean, you're a wise counseling type guy, Sam. Is this wise to get this upset and have this kind of a tantrum and announce it publicly and say you're going to do this thing?
Well, I mean, if the solution involves him going there, and if that brings him happiness and peace, distancing himself from whatever thing is causing him stress and making him feel bad isn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
And good for him. I'm glad he has a destination he can go to. A lot of people here are not very happy and don't have a destination that they can go to.
On a scale of 1 to 100, what is the likelihood Billy Joe Armstrong will renounce his citizenship and move to any country? Go ahead.
Any country? I'd say 90.
90%?
Yeah.
That's right here. Okay. I'm going to say... I'm going to say 20%.
Really?
Yeah, 20%.
And this is the guy that made the song American Idiot.
Yeah, I know, but you know.
And they made a stage play off Broadway off of, about it.
Yeah, so he, but moving, leaving the country, okay, this is what I was talking about early. I think he should sit down with someone that knows something about constitutional law, something about the Supreme Court, and then sit down with somebody who thinks this decision is great, and then have a talk with them, and then try to like understand people that have different views than him, understand the legal reason for it, and then start yelling things from a stage after you understand something. Because it doesn't seem like he understands it, because if he understood it, he would know this is the worst time for someone like him, politically active, to leave the country and renounce the citizenship. He should be here if he thinks it's so important, and persuading people, because now that's what you have to do. You have people on a local level. If you don't like this law or any of these kinds of laws, the Supreme Court has said, look, this is not what we do. We're not sitting around here deciding whether 1 week, 3 weeks, 16 weeks, 14 weeks. Why is that the Supreme Court's job to decide when an abortion is okay? And that's them saying this. Why? How did we get in this? We got in this because it was a weird decision that was political at the beginning. It's still political. We want to get out of the politics. We want to just take laws and see if they're constitutional or not. But sitting around going 1 week or the other week.
It seems like it was a political decision just based off of how it broke down, you know, who was nominated by which president. It's to say that this isn't a political move, but having it become a federal law was a political move. Both of them are political moves.
One political move shot it into something that was not even Ruth Bader Ginsburg thought was good law. And the other political move, which you're right, I agree with you, is political, is shooting it back to the states. Now everybody has to go to their representatives and persuade their neighbors to do what they think is best. And we need Billy Joe here, I think. This is my personal message to Billy Joe. We need you here to take your opinions and persuade your neighbors, and not just this issue, but all the other issues that require local politics and local representatives and state representatives. I mean, you stay here and you work on it. And if you leave in a tantrum, you won't get anything done. And I think that's what he'll probably realize once he sobers up and says, you know what, I think I could do more by going back home and maybe not running for office, but starting grassroots organizations, giving some of your money to candidates that you like on a local level. None of this like lobbying money thrown on a federal level to try to say there should be one federal policy for all states, because then you get into constitutional weirdness like this law was for 50 years. Now they're saying, hey, go back home. Persuade your neighbors, and that's democracy. You need Billy Joe. Billy Joe could do a lot for his causes, but he's going to run away in a tantrum? That's why I don't think he will. I think he's just, you know, doing a rock and roll tantrum. And this happens every time a Republican wins the presidency, Sam. You have to admit this. Every time you have a litany of celebrities saying they're going to move, they're going to leave the country. How many of them do?
The ones that have the money have property elsewhere, so they go.
But they never do it.
They never do it openly. But I'm sure that a lot of them just say, "You know what? I'm going wherever."
No, they don't do it. These are tantrums. These are celebrity tantrums. You see them all the time. But
honestly, just from his quote, I think there's too much effing stupidity or too much effing stupid in the world to go back. It's not a matter of trying to convince people anymore. He wrote an album about it.
Yeah,
and he's like, I'm done trying. If you guys aren't going to get it,
yeah,
I'm
but
out.
His album said American Idiot. That took a person who's a president who has a family and has done an honorable job in his life as public service, and he called him an idiot. And he started from that point, and he wanted to have a conversation. And you're going to persuade some people that way, but not everybody. But I'll bet he did persuade a lot of people with his play and his stuff. But he's so I'm moving to a monarchy with a history of imperialism, as like the UK. Is he going to go there and change their monarchy? Is he going to do some? We have to end the monarchy here in England.
I mean, how much of the monarchy is only symbolic at this point, though?
Well, every penny spent on it is money that is not spent on the poor.
Absolutely, so still symbolic.
So is that where he's going? Anyway, my advice to him: come back and do the hard work, because you know he screamed from that podium for so long. And then the end result was Roe versus Wade being overturned. So he's got to go do the hard work. That's it. All he's doing is screaming from a podium with these kind of things that you could argue are it's kind of low hanging fruit. Oh, I hate George Bush. I hate Ted Cruz. I hate him. F him. You know, put that behind you. I think he's smart enough. He writes amazing songs. He could just get down and dirty. And do some, hard, door-to-door, good old-fashioned politicking. Or he could join Tom DeLonge and try to prove whether spacemen are real or not.
I agree that his services would probably be best used fighting for the cause here rather than running away.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I just don't think it's very intelligent. It's not thought through, and then now he's going to have to backtrack.
It got a hell of a response, though.
It does. So I can go on stage and say, "F the police," and I can get a large response. But it's irresponsible and wrong, and it is pandering. So, F America. You know, it's not a good look for anybody. But if he comes back if you're on stage saying F America and we have it on film, it'll be hard to win an election anyway. So maybe he should just go there. The weird story, and you can check into this, it's kind of weird. There's this weird thing that says, a rumor that says he has he recently filled out papers to run for president in 2024. Billy Joe.
Fascinating.
As a Republican.
Ha ha ha.
And, there's just a bunch of stories about
Subversive.
It. Yeah, it could be like a slippy and just get in the party and change from there. But, I've seen tantrums. This one's pretty insane because you're in a foreign country on foreign soil saying, F America, I'm effing renouncing my citizenship, and I'm coming here to you where you beautiful people are, and the queen. And then you're kind of painting yourself into a corner, but we'll see how he gets out of it.
I wonder if he says that everywhere.
That'd be interesting. Like, I'm moving here to Slovenia.
I'm moving here to Cambodia. He gets that. He'll get a standing eruption of a response every single time.
He'll boost up merch sales on the way out. That's for sure.
And by the way, stop off at the merch table.
Oh, but it's also divisive because there's so many people that like his music. I know he doesn't care. He's in it for the fight. But now, if you like Green Day, then you're not American, or you're into the F America camp. And if you you can't be patriotic and like Green Day now. But he doesn't care. This guy, I got a lot of respect for him too. He's so punk rock. This is what punk rock is all about. You know, it's doing this kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Do not think it through. Do not just wreck something. And I think he's wrecked something here. And I like him. I like him even more now. He's awesome. I also heard that Trey, the other member of the band, it said he's leaving the country immediately and moving to Catalina. So we'll see how that works also. All right, Joe Escalante, live from Hollywood, back after the traffic. It's hard to turn that song off because it's all about me. Written by Steve Jones. If you haven't seen Pistol, the Sex Pistols drama that's on Hulu, you got to see it. It's really good. Really good. That and The Offer on Paramount Plus. I recommend both of them. Of course, always if you have not seen Mr. In Between, I think it's the best TV show that has been out in maybe 10 years. And when I say 10 years, I think when people say that, they just say, I don't know, I don't remember before 10 years. So it sounds like a good thing to say. We've got a few stories that we can deal with before we leave. One of them is kind of interesting. This is interesting. Phil Collins has, who knew? Phil Collins, the singer of Genesis, formerly the drummer of Genesis, writer of such songs as Susu Studio.
I don't want him to sue me for getting it wrong.
Hilarious.
Where's my rim shot? Thank you.
Now, he is like some amazing collector of American history relics, and he has all this stuff from the Alamo. And he donated it to the Alamo in Texas, in San Antonio. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty cool. If you can't go, then see Pee-wee's
Big Adventure.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Yeah. You'll see plenty of it there. And he donated it, and then these guys came, a book comes out written by journalists saying that all the stuff that he donated was phony and fake artifacts. And they had been sold to Phil Collins by these guys that are now suing the book writers, saying you defamed me by saying my stuff is fake. Anyway, that's going on right now, and we'll...
That's fascinating.
And you said Phil Collins apologized to the world for his musical career?
Yeah, like this was a while back, and I'll do a quick Google search on it in a little bit just to get more...
Well, we got to go. We're out of here. This might be for next week.
Yeah. He was lampooned on South Park, and everybody made fun of him.
He's an easy target.
He didn't realize that he was a target.
He's
and,
in a bubble.
Like, he had all the Disney songs and everything, and then, like, one time, like, somebody brought it up to him on social media at some point, and, like, he had no idea that people were lampooning him, and, like, his career was kind of a joke. And I don't want to say that, divisively. That's just kind of how people looked at it. And he was like, yeah, dude, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that my career did that. Like, he apologized for his career. I felt really bad for the guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's actually, if he's apologizing, you got to have sympathy for that. But he does owe us, some of us, at least some of an apology. Because some of that stuff was just sappy and it was killing me. But the earlier Genesis stuff.
It was when he retired from his... when he was retiring, he lost hearing and he couldn't play the drums because he had a surgery on a dislocated vertebrae in his neck. And he was like, I'm sorry it was all so successful. I honestly didn't mean for it to happen like that. It's hardly surprising that people grew to hate me.
Poor guy.
I feel so bad that people were just railing on him for stuff.
Yeah, now I feel bad. It's kind of like... that Guy Fieri, there's a comedian that does a bit about Guy Fieri, and they're like, Guy Fieri, he's a joke to so many people. And this comedian comes out and goes, and why is he a joke? Just for being like this kind of nice guy that's enthusiastic about food, and everybody hates him for it, you know? And then you feel bad. And you should feel bad because, it's hard to do what people do when they get up there and get out there in public. So, poor Phil Collins. I feel bad now. I feel bad for making fun of my brother for liking Phil Collins. I might go apologize to my brother.
All I know is I'm going home listening to In the Air tonight.
Yeah, I'm not
feeling that sense of remorse for having ever thought badly about him.
I'm not a sadist, so I'm not going to do that. Okay, so comedian Michael Che was sued. I didn't even know this happened. Someone on TikTok said, you stole one of my jokes. Something called Homegirl Hotline. And he beat the copyright lawsuit.
Okay.
The judge said, you failed to argue any of the elements that your videos are protected under copyright law. There's certain things, like you can say you copied me, and you can say, I have a show about a firefighter who's going through a divorce and struggling between... working for the fire department and taking care of his kids, and the mom's on prescription drugs. Okay, let's say that's a premise for your show. You can go, that's on NBC, ABC can put out a show about a firefighter who is struggling with a divorce, and the mom has a pill problem. And just those three things alone, probably not protectable. If you have one of them, it's definitely not protectable. Two of them, still probably not protectable. Three of them might be protectable if that's the only thing that could ever happen in a fireman show. But when you add all these other elements together, usually courts find, well, you know, even if you pitched the show to CBS and they did it and they bought it and then later you pitched it to NBC and CBS didn't buy it, but NBC did buy it, and then CBS did make it that way. You have to have things that you're suing over have to be protectable. They have to be minimally creative, and so it has to be all kinds of stuff in a story, and not just the bullet points. And I don't know a lot about this TikTok skit, but it's very hard to prove someone stole your idea, because ideas themselves are not protectable. That's what people should remember from this case. Ideas are not protectable. Only the creative expression of those ideas are protectable. And that's a lot of copying. If you copy that, you're in trouble. But not just the ideas. Joe Escalante live from Hollywood. We'll be back next week. And I will leave you now with just a taste of the greatest song ever written.